Are you ready for this? Hello and welcome to your all-out cricket pod blast. Welcome back. It's the World Cup preview show, number two, because we've had a World Cup preview show. To my left, Vish Ahuntharaja, young award-winning journalist and man about town. Hi, Vish.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be on, finally.
Real pleasure to finally have you here. And also at the far end of the room, Lizzie Ammon, young award-winning journalist and lady about town. Lovely to have you too.
Thank you very much. None of those things are true, but it's a pleasure to be here.
And then Phil, right here, a journalist.
That'll do.
A man about town, Phil Walker.
Who's won nothing.
Oh, that's
nothing.
You've won in the lottery of life, Phil, though, haven't you?
Thanks, Alex. How are you, mate?
Don't you live on a boat some of the time?
I do. We're already off-piste. Yeah. How are you, sir?
You're already winning. I'm fantastic. I'm really pleased. I'll tell you what is not maybe quite so pleasing. It's the reaction to the World Cup. I'm excited. You can probably tell from my voice. We're going to talk about the World Cup. It's going to be focused. We're going to talk about the first five games. Then we're going to talk about the back controversy. We're going to talk about our favourite players. Real positive stuff here. But I tell you what, I know you're all members of the British press, but they are a bunch of Grinches, aren't they, Vish?
Yeah, definitely the older ones. Some of the younger ones are quite good, aren't they?
Well, I tell you what, I've got some clippings here, looking forward to the World Cup. I'm going to hand you each a clipping, and I want you to take on the persona of David Hopps watching his dog being shot. If you can imagine that level of misery, just read the highlighted bit. Vish, you go first. This is from The Telegraph. Let me just bear with me 1 second, because I think we'll have some music over this, Vish.
Am I reading all the highlighted bits?
Even
by Steve bits. James? Am I reading that as well?
Yeah, but we don't want him to get away with it. So I'm going into classical.
Cricket World Cup will be a tedious affair, which shows how 50-over game is being squeezed in the middle.
And that's an actual headline, right?
Yeah, that,
it's quite a wordy headline. Carry on, Vish, and speak up.
Cricket World Cup is a forgettable and tediously long tournament that few in England and the players themselves can bring themselves to look forward to.
Few of the players can bring themselves to look forward to. Wow, that's big stuff. We'll
so
come back to that.
That's ex-England opener Steve James
that's
in The
lovely.
Telegraph. Thanks very much.
Phil, for you, something from Crick Info from January the 16th.
Right.
This is Dravid and Graham Smith talking for Crick Info, if you will, Phil.
Okay, this is Dravid. It's almost easy, barring the upset, or someone really having a bad tournament. You can almost predict who the top eight will be sitting here in the studio today. There comes a time in a tournament like this, and I sensed it a little bit during the last World Cup when I wasn't playing, but just watching, that everyone starts to wait for the quarterfinals. Sure, in between you have some big games, but you know, eventually, these are going to be the best eight teams.
We don't miss Ross at all. Phil, that was wonderful.
Now, if that's not Dravid, recreated right for you there.
That's absolutely right. You are channeling it. Lizzie, how do you follow that? I've got you something from The Guardian. This is actually from 2012, and this is just to demonstrate that this particular violin has been played for a number of years.
Oh, this is cruel, because this is from the ever-brilliant Rob Smythe. However, he does say... The spin is horrified to note that in 2015 the ICC will persist with the format for last year's World Cup. The 2011 tournament was good fun for the most part, but the never-ending first group stage only worked because England's endearing haplessness infused it with considerable drama. Even then, the eight quarterfinalists were as expected when the tournament started. It took 30 days and 42 games to confirm the bleeding obvious. It was like a film with a 75-minute first act and 15 minutes for the last two acts.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, that's 2012 he's writing that. He's pre-misery. He's clocking up the miles straight away,
yeah.
Isn't he?
This is a proper preview show. You know, the idea we've just got to try and generate a bit of passion for this interminable tournament. I have to add, Alex, and I'm not just saying this, I genuinely don't buy any of this, because cricket is meant to be hard. It's meant to be a slog. It's meant to be interminably dull. interspersed with glorious punctuated moments of wonder and beauty. Yeah. That's what cricket is, right? So let's not kid ourselves. Let's not kind of keep calling for this sort of streamlined, filleted, two-week jamboree nonsense. No, I'm not having that. Yeah. This is cricket. This is how it should be.
He's not having it. Phil's not having it. Lizzie, what about you? What are your views on the format of the tournament before we get to the teams?
I don't have a problem with the format or the number of teams. I think it could be done slightly differently if we had more than one game a day and there wasn't so much TV greedy money. And then we wouldn't have quite this. It is a bit hard work.
It's a bit long.
And it's a bit hard work if you've got to get up at 3 o'clock every morning to watch every game.
And there's the rub. There's the rub. journalists, they like nothing more than not watching cricket. And players, like nothing more than not playing cricket.
Yeah.
That's the problem. There is the crux of the issue. The people who call the shots, they're kind of thinking this is hassle.
If I was there at normal hours...
Liz, that's another issue again.
It'd be absolutely fine. Bish, I've got a proposal for you. It's not indecent, but I think it's...
I've stopped listening already.
So tell me, I think that knockout cricket, or at least tournament ODI cricket, is the only form of ODI cricket that's tolerable. I can't bear ODI series.
Well, the thing about not even just an ODI series, but this World Cup is a very ODI World Cup in that there is a huge boring bit that you have to get through to get to the interesting bit at the end.
The middle overs.
Yeah, it is very ODI. An ODI knockout is quite a good idea because we've seen over the last few years that, you know, you can get upsets in 50 over cricket. It is, regardless of its kind of draggy on nature, and I know that those aren't, you know, words, but...
Draggy on nature? It's conjuring, I think, for the listener, maybe an idea of what it's like to watch Scotland-New Zealand in week three. It's draggy on nature.
But, you know, yeah, and but I think we've seen with ODI cricket that you do get upsets. And I think, you're right. Having a straight kind of knockout where one game and that's it would be brilliant, but there's no way of doing that and guaranteeing India 8 games, is there?
No, that's right. And actually, I don't think I'm saying I want knockout. I obviously love knockout, but I'm actually happy with tournament ODI as well. I think it's series ODI that I find insufferable.
Yeah, the bilateral.
Yeah.
When there are seven matches.
When there are seven of them tacked onto the end of a test match, that's boring. Mm. If you don't like World Cup ODI, you just don't like ODI cricket, to my mind, because this is as good as it gets.
Bang on.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a quick mindless break, where we all reflect on the fact that everyone's agreed with me, and then we're going to come back and start talking about some games. Lovely. Ross, we miss you, Ross.
And okay. Joe, we miss Joe too.
And we miss Joe. Joe travelling in whatever five-star
He's
hotel
you're
in,
He's slamming it through the 5 stars of India.
Okay. Esteemed listeners, I give you 5 fixtures to whet the appetite. And the reason I picked this 5 is the 6th fixture involves New Zealand playing for the second time. So there's a natural break after the 5th game. New Zealand, Sri Lanka, England, Australia, South Africa, Zimbabwe, the Derby, India, Pakistan, Derby number 2, Ireland, West Indies, Cross Atlantic Derby. Wonderful. What a great set of 5 fixtures. They're so
Vish is
rich.
Right. They have front-loaded the power play overs, haven't they? Yeah. With the best fixtures.
That's actually right. So I think what we're going to do is just take each one of them in turn. And I want you to declare pretty early on who you think the winner's going to be.
All right.
And we're going to be held to this. You're going to be tweeting it afterwards. And then we're going to have a sort of inverse accumulator. A sort of perverse accumulator, if you will, where at the end of it, we've all tried to tell Vish, the betting guru, why we think that this particular set of 5 fixtures is going to win. But Vish, you're going to have to declare your hand at the end, I think. So, Lizzie, can I kick off with New Zealand, Sri Lanka? Do you feel comfortable with that as a fixture? It's maybe one of the hardest to call.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm going with New
Zealand. But call it.
I'm going with New Zealand just because they're New Zealand and because they're brilliant and because... they are on a roll and they are in the right conditions. And Sri Lanka, slightly hit and miss and a bit reliant on a couple of players, I think. I am notoriously rubbish at calling games, so almost certainly Sri Lanka will win.
OK, so Lizzie's calling New Zealand, but if you want to be perverse or inverted about it, you would go for Sri Lanka. What about you, Phil?
Well, If Malinga plays, and I think he said that he probably is going to be available.
He's played the two warm-up games.
Yeah, so he will start. Then I am genuinely going for Sri Lanka, and not just to shake this thing up, but I genuinely fancy Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
I think there's a kind of peculiar pressure now on New Zealand because everybody's identified them as dark horses, come emergent, semi-finalists, finalists. I fancy Sri Lanka for that one.
Well, I've got some stats for you. Vish, you're a betting man, so you will have picked up on this. But
just to clarify, he is a betting man.
Yeah, Vish, you're a betting man. The game is in Christchurch against South Africa on the same ground. Sri Lanka were 279 for 7 in the warm-up game off only 44 overs, even though Steyn and Philander and Morkel were all playing. And South Africa were 188 for 5 off 27, and they won. But 188 for 5, every chance they could have lost that game. So I look at Sri Lanka's recent play on the same ground against a very fancy team, South Africa, and they look pretty good. Herath took 3 for 22. Is there a better spin pairing, Vish, in this World Cup than Herath and Senana Yake? Is there indeed any spin pairing other than Herath and Senana Yake?
Well, treaders and root.
What
do you want?
It's another one of these
containers, now basically the Tupperware box of partnerships.
I mean, for all those statistical reasons, I'm going to call it, and I'm going to say Sri Lanka as well. And the narrative, to my mind, is Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
This would be the same Sri Lanka that lost to Zimbabwe by 7 wickets.
That's right. That's the same Zimbabwe.
And who were hammered in the ODI series.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
But I'm just checking. We're really not leaning too much on these warm-up games when a dozen players were playing and, you know, Ireland got absolutely walloped against Scotland and so on. We're not reading too much into these games.
I'm reading a lot into it.
Let's be fair.
All right.
If Sri Lanka play Zimbabwe 10 times, they're going to win 9.5.
We've just got the equivalent from Phil of calm down, dear. So go on, Vish, you're a betting man, Vish.
Vish, do you occasionally have a bet?
I do like a flutter, yeah.
Okay, tell us what you think of New Zealand, Sri Lanka and the reasoning that you've heard from the pod.
I kind of, it's very kind of, we're very much covering our asses here, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
Yeah. I can't see how Sri Lanka are going to win that. I genuinely believe that. Because Malinga's played the warm-ups, but Malinga, ever since he decided not to play Test cricket, his fitness has been downhill. He takes a lot of time to get going as well. So even if he's played those games, he's not going to be nowhere near as fit. And they're just cannon fodder, the Sri Lankan bowlers. And Prasad's gone, he's the big one. Dimika Prasad, how some, and I, as a 4'8", you know, slightly chubby Sri Lankan, I don't understand how he bowls like that. So yeah, he's going to be a big miss, and Malinga, you know, at 80% is nothing really. So it's I think New Zealand are going to hammer them.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's
that was persuasive, wasn't it? That was persuasive.
Well, there you go.
Just to say for the few people in England who have not come across Vish, he's not 4'8". He's at least 5'3".
5'8", yeah.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad we clarified that. I think our listener often speculates as to what we look like. So that's the end of the first game, mindless speculation. We've got a 2-2 split here on New Zealand and Sri Lanka.
But Vish always takes it on a 2-2. You have to go with Vish.
You like the Len Goodman of the judging.
Okay, wonderful. We're going to have a short mindless break, and then we're going to come back with a second mouthwatering fixture, which is England Australia.
Oh, who's going to win that one?
This is the kind of game that if I fancied a flutter, I would not bet on. Because if you ever actually bet on a game involving a team you like, it's painful.
I do it all the time. It's called hedging your bets. It's the only way through.
Yeah, you go for the disappointment bet,
don't you?
Do it all the time.
Misery bets.
Oh, no, I can. That's tainted money if you win on a loss. No, I couldn't do that.
Shoes are shoes.
He has a lot to learn. Vish,
Oh, dear. Okay, England, Australia. Why don't we kick off this time with you, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say it, Stokes? Do they miss him?
Oh, come on. That's a non-sequitur. We'll leave Stokesy alone. We can talk about him next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. He's not there. He should be, but he's not. I understand why he's not. England will get walloped, obviously, on Friday night. But, you know, they'll come good and they'll make the semi-finals. That's my prediction. But they'll obviously get walloped.
Lizzie, you're looking completely amazed by that prediction. Have you not noticed that Phil has got his head in the clouds on this?
Relentlessly positive.
Yeah, that's
relentlessly.
Right. Well, come on then.
I'm not scarred by constantly thinking about this every minute of the day,
you're
though.
Not scarred
and constantly discussing it. So I can kind of take a step back, dream a little, appreciate it's a game, and genuinely back England, who I think have got a load of good players, to make the semi-finals.
Genuinely back them by saying they're going to get walloped.
They're going to get walloped against the best team in the tournament.
Yeah.
First up, under lights in front of 80,000 Melbourneites.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to get walloped there.
Yeah.
But I think that they will come good enough to turn in a respectable show.
Lizzie, what's your view on the selection dilemmas facing this England team? And in particular, dare I begin with columnist for All Out Cricket, Ravi Papara.
Oh, Ravi. Well,
this is tabloid.
Shall I leave the room for this?
He's in the team because he's Ravi, and that's the end of the story, really.
Oh. And he's going to be in the starting team on Saturday morning?
I think he is. I think Peter Moores knows what he wants. He knows what 11 he wants. I mean, we're just all sort of praying and drinking our potions to make sure that Ravi comes good.
He had a couple of overs against Pakistan today. Went for, I think, 14 or 18. If it was an attempt to try and build up some confidence and get some overs under his belt, it didn't work. He didn't score any runs again. He scored about 11 off 23.
Mm.
Vish, I know you love Ravi. You love him like a son, which doesn't make any sense on an age bracket basis. So what's your feeling on England-Australia?
I think we're going to get hammered. By we, I mean England. But it would...
And
I
we think, are going to get hammered as well. We've got plans, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, no, we do, yeah. Mm. We plan on staying up all night.
Valentine's weekend. I haven't told my girlfriend about that yet.
Yeah.
Thanks for the invite, lads.
NFL.
You'll be busy. You've got kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
I think we'll be less scarred by defeat if bowlers bowl well. Because I think with batting, you can just click, can't you? And we've got enough games and enough decent grounds to accrue some good scores and give the batsman confidence. And I think maybe it helps being hammered by Australia in the tri-series because just water for ducks back now. Isn't it? Everyone expects us to lose. It won't be that much of a mental scarring if we don't come good because people have, you know, even the Australian press, they've kind of peaked too early. When
the
it comes
pressure
to
is off,
England.
Isn't it? The pressure is off England this game.
Certainly for this game, yeah. Certainly for this game.
I'm backing England on this one. I'm backing England on this one and I'm not backing them to do particularly well in the tournament.
So here we go. So there's this flawless logic. So you've been saying that England are useless for the last 6 months.
That's right.
Now up against clearly the strongest side in the tournament.
Yeah.
With home advantage in front of 80,000 Melbourneites on their big opening night.
Yeah.
You're going with England.
I am. And I tell
genius.
You why.
Genius. This is why the folks tune in, right?
Approximately one every six or seven games, England somehow win.
Yeah.
And we're at about six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's New Zealand all over again. I think it's so much build-up, so much expectation on this one. And England have got absolutely nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Also, probability-wise, Morgan's got three ducks in four innings. That cannot carry on forever.
Did you see how he got out today?
I heard about it.
He managed to get a thick inside edge on a scoop, which went straight to first.
That's genius.
I saw how he got out to Mitchell Johnson as well in the final of the Tri-Series, where he just shouldered arms.
But then he also hit Johnson six over extra cover last year. Yeah. So, you know, and he did make a brilliant 100 as well in this series, in that last series. So I think we've got to be careful before we write Morgan off as a batsman and as a match winner.
Oh, just
very briefly on Ravi, and I'll try and be as unbiased and fair as possible.
Of course.
He's clearly struggled when he's been in Australia. And there was, me and Vish were talking about this earlier and trying to be fair. That shot he played against the long hop, where he toe-ended it, trying to roll his wrists on a long-up outside off stump, caught a backward point. That was a horror show of a shot, and it betrayed his concerns, his scrambled head. You know, if he was relaxed, he'd have just gone over the top, hit it for two, bounce four.
Yeah.
It shows that he's not quite right. That said, there's no compelling case to drop him yet, I don't think. And I think if he has three more bad games or even two more bad games, eventually things will have to change up. But the clamour for Alex Hales is complicated by the fact he's an opener. And also when Hales has been given seven or eight knocks in ODIs, he hasn't made a 50 either. Now, if Ravi had been up in the top three or four, he would definitely have made runs, as he did in Sri Lanka. And he made 250s when he was in Sri Lanka from number six or seven. And that was only a couple of months ago. The bowling is clearly not trusted by Morgan. But it's also not trusted by Morgan on flat, bouncy pitches in Australia. The game may be slightly different in New Zealand in different conditions and on different surfaces. So I think it would be a smart move for England, and I'm trying to be as fair as possible to keep him in that side because that's their model. But be prepared to be flexible if it continues not to work out for him. He was the ODI player of the year for England a year and a half ago.
Well, one of the advantages of an interminable tournament is England can give him a couple of games and then still get rid of him in plenty of time to warm the next guy up.
That's the nature of it, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's England-Australia. We took a little longer on that one because it was quite passionate. Oh, more to say on England-Australia.
You didn't even ask me.
I thought there was some kind. Lizzie, I apologise. Get in there.
You stole my thunder anyway. It's like you read my mind. I think England are going to win.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I think England are going to win. I think Australia are going to have a mare. They're going to have an absolute lionel.
Yeah. This is good fun. That's another 2-2.
This is extraordinary.
But you know, I'm happy to go with England because I think that would be brilliant.
And if I was betting, you wouldn't be betting on Australia, would you? I mean, if you were actually going to have a little...
Yeah, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't get any odds.
No, you'd stick your £2 on England.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then you'd go and buy your shoes.
Kevin Keegan moment here from Vish.
When Robbie brings it home in front of brilliant.
Them. It would be so good if they just tanked on our opening game.
Oh dear,
it generally would.
Let's all just savour that thought.
All right, okay. 2003, Australia was 70 for 4 against Pakistan. First game of the tournament. They got 320 and Simon's got 150. I'll never forget that. Australia, they bat to 10. They're all match winners. It makes me sick, but they're all match winners. Yeah. Faulkner comes in at 9. He'll just hit 70 if they have a top order collapse.
He's injured. Oh, is he?
Oh, right. England it is. Right, let's call it out.
Ed Hawkins, Ed Hawkins on his betting blog says Faulkner is the most useful and effective player in the Australian side. And that he thinks there's value on England because in Faulkner's absence. So that's Ed Hawkins. I'm throwing him in. Another 2-2 split, listener. Spend a little longer on that because it's a passion thing, isn't it? It's the heart over the head with England-Australia. I don't know.
You know how it is in the Football World Cup. It's always more fun once England have gone.
Yeah.
I think the same about cricket.
Right. Well, you'd rather they just
go away. You make me miserable because you're so frustrating. Can I just enjoy cricket with you not being there?
Yeah, but that'll take 47 days. So don't get too excited. Okay, we'll be back in a moment for South Africa's Zimbabwe derby number one. All right, derby number one, South Africa versus Zimbabwe. Before yesterday, or in fact before about 3 days ago, I was going to pass over this one in about 8 seconds. This is the equivalent of sort of, you know, Stoke versus, Man City or Barcelona. I just thought it was... I apologise to Stoke even on that one, you know. But the last couple of days have been absolutely extraordinary. Lizzie, Zimbabwe... Now,
I'm not going to be as bonkers as that. No, South Africa will definitely win.
Okay, we've got South Africa from Lizzie. Can you assess their chances, though, Zimbabwe? Because they must have been buoyed by the victory today against, what was it?
Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no... we're clutching at straws here. Yeah. I mean, there's confidence boosting, but there's a gulf in... ability, and that's going to, you know... That's
one team is better than the other one. That's right, and that's a pertinent point to make. I've got a little Zimbabwe frisson of news. We're going to talk later about our heroes. I used to live next door to Greg Lamb.
Sensational. Right, we'll keep your powder dry on that one, Alex.
Yeah? You can wait for that one, listener. Bated breath.
Yeah, South Africa will walk it.
My childhood with Lamb.
Come on, that's enough. South Africa will walk that one, obviously. Vish, agreed?
Yeah, I think even...
Anyway, it can be a scrap, be an actual match.
No. Farhan Behardeen's going to score runs for South Africa. That's how bad it'll be for Zimbabwe.
That says it
okay,
all.
I'm just going to be contrary. I'm going to call Zimbabwe. For Greg Lamb, I'm calling Zimbabwe. So it's 3-1 on that one, just to give the listener an option. Let's move on quickly to derby number two. It's mouth-watering as well. It's India versus Pakistan. Victors in the warm-up game against England. Vish, can I begin with you on India-Pakistan?
They've got some history, haven't they? Yeah.
He's a betting man. He knows
might have been. I think it was an FA Cup final, wasn't it? Or certainly
it was something.
Final.
Yeah, it was Matthews' final.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Goal in extra time. It's India, isn't it?
Is it batsmen versus bowlers, or is that too simplistic?
No, I don't think it's that simplistic. It is bowlers versus bowlers, I think. But I said India, I actually meant Pakistan. I think Pakistan are more well-rounded team. Yeah.
The other ones.
You think Pakistan are going to win this one?
Yeah, well, I definitely think this is their best chance in all the World Cup encounters with them. I mean, maybe they should have won in 2011 when when Tendulkar somehow was given not out after review for that Astral LBW. Please don't send me any hate mail for that. But this is the, you know, you saw how Pakistan dismantled England today. That's a chase that they would have fouled up 10 times out of 10, maybe 2 years ago. They have a bit more structure there. They can have Umar Akmal being Umar Akmal when they've got people like Shahzad and Misbah doing the business up top. And Afridi actually has some sense now. He had some brilliant knocks in, you know, against New Zealand.
Mm. 60 and 20-odd balls, wasn't it?
Yeah, and also there was one way he saw it through, under a runner ball, which was very Afridi-like. So, yeah, it's Pakistan for me.
Okay, Pakistan from Vish. What about you, Lizzie?
India. I'm a bit unconvinced by Pakistan's top four.
Yeah. Jamshed is back, though, and he's got a silly name.
Yeah.
And also very, very fishy outside off. So.
I've got Harris Sahail in my fantasy side, just because of the ghost story.
That's interesting.
Really enjoyed it.
Well, I
didn't get your call, though. So you're saying India.
I'm with India.
What do you think of India's bowling lineup? Because I quite like Patel. He did well against
England.
I do.
It's a bit samey now, with no Ishant.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's not much variation.
The chap who came in for Ishant in the game against England, though, who was not in the World Cup squad at the time, has now stepped in.
Is that Mohit Sharma?
That's right. Yeah. Bowled very, very well against England. I mean, you never know whether that's an improvement.
He's very good. He's actually he's a student of Ian Pont, I believe.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think he's done some work.
Pace merchant.
Was he the one that Pont discovered?
But no, so this guy is Atul Sharma, who you're thinking of, who was he was actually training to be, is it javelinist?
Yeah.
At the Olympics. And Pont took him over, and then he basically took Pont's money and
ran. This is the lad who's now in the IPL.
No, he was in the IPL. He then got binned, and now he's playing kind of district cricket in the US, running away from his debts.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Phil, what about
allegedly
you? India versus Pakistan.
Well, Ahmed Shahzad I like as a player, and I've been talking about him for a couple of weeks. I think you're right. Around him in the top four, they look a little bit flaky. They miss Hafiz, even though he's a bit up and down, but he brings a kind of prestige to that top four. But I like Ahmed Shahzad. I love Umar Akmal. Everyone loves Umar Akmal. That said, I'd veer slightly towards India because historically, this game is slightly bigger for Pakistan than it is for India, and I think they almost build themselves up into this kind of intense crescendo, you know, where it's the be-all and end-all. And they sometimes find that they overemphasise it, Pakistan, you know, and they've lost games that they should have won throughout the history of World Cups and T20s against India. India are just a slightly more kind of level-headed kind of cricketing culture compared to Pakistan, and I think just about on balance with it being the first game, I'd veer towards India. But it is a really tough one to call.
Yeah.
It's a really tough one to call. And I would say that I think Pakistan are probably the stronger side over the course of the tournament.
Well, I'm going for Pakistan only because England beat India twice and then Pakistan beat England. And everyone knows that's the way sport works.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
job done.
Inevitably,
job done. That's
Pakistan
what I meant.
Will beat India. Okay, so Hans, well, let me just quickly review. What's
so we've got India.
Two Indias. And Vish, you were with?
Pakistan
as well. It's another 2-2.
So again, it goes to Vish.
Okay, we're going to take an extremely short break and come back with the final fixture. It's the cross-Atlantic derby. It's Ireland versus the West Indies. Ireland versus the West Indies. I think this is the most difficult game to call. This is all over the place, isn't it? Lizzie,
this
you
is
get
mouthwatering.
First. Yeah,
because
it's bizarre.
Group B is infinitely more interesting than Group A, isn't it, as a group?
Right.
And West Indies are a rabble.
Yeah.
They're an absolute mess. But Ireland have just been hammered by Scotland. If we're not allowed to read anything in, though. We've been told by Phil that we're not allowed to read anything in.
They did get hammered.
Don't read anything.
They did get absolutely hammered.
Yeah.
But Ireland are going to win this one. Because William Porterfield is going to he's going to bring his troops to the party. And Paul Sterling is going to blast a quick ton off 80 balls.
Okay, I've got McLeod in my fantasy team.
Callum?
That's right. And
Scotland's
just quickly,
Callum McLeod.
That's
you mean
right.
Scotland's Callum McLeod?
Yeah. McLeod of the Clan McLeod.
No? Is it?
Highlander reference?
No.
No.
Not seen it, mate.
Holy ground. Never mind.
No.
So I've got McLeod in my team because I had to make the books balance. Because unlike the all-out cricket fantasy game, which is awesome fun, where you get unlimited funds. Mm. On some of the other ones, they've been a bit mean and restricted the amount that you can spend on
players.
Well,
you know, it's austerity measures versus tax and spend.
It's exactly. You're the Ed Balls of cricket's fantasy all leagues.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's not pleased with that. No. Yeah. Vish, Ireland versus West Indies. Are you going to have a flutter on this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, Ireland. They're definitely Ireland. Because, right. Well, I mean, the expectation is on them now to win because West Indies are, they're a shambles, really, and Ireland obviously have history in beating the West Indies, but it's, I genuinely can't wait. This is going to be this will be the game that I'd want to watch from start to finish.
I don't think there's a game in this top five that I don't want to watch. This is extraordinary. Phil, Ireland versus West Indies. It's an old rivalry. Maybe that's going to cloud, you know, the West Indies' judgment, the years of, you know, not having much to do with each other. Maybe they'll be so angry.
There was, of course, the infamous mid-60s game when the West Indies went over there and got bowled out for 30-odd or whatever it was.
No.
Sobers' team lost to Ireland, yeah.
Is that right? There you go.
They'd had a few.
Were you alive then? How do you know this?
I know everything about
this. Extraordinary. Okay, so are we getting Ireland from you as well?
No. No. You're going to get the West Indies for me on this one. I find the whole thing deeply upsetting, like we all do. And as George said, half a bottle of rum down the other week, we may well be dealing with the last days of West Indies cricket as we know it.
Yeah.
That said, I think that they're going to go out there and almost in spite of themselves, they're going to put on enough of a show to beat Ireland. And everybody's backing Ireland. This has been the kind of the giant killing. It's been called up for a number of months. Joey Harmon, bless him. All right, Joe. He was calling this one up a few months ago. You know, I think in a way, especially with what happened a couple of days ago with Ireland, it's going to get to that point where I think Gale will turn up and he'll score a few, almost as a kind of dirty protest. He'll go out there and hit 170 balls and probably not even celebrate.
I love the idea of it being a dirty protest. To go out there and score.
Lendl Simmons is in the side. He played well the other day for 50-odd. I think he's a good player. I'm going to go with the Windies.
Yeah, I mean, Ireland are missing Murtagh and they're missing Rankin. And those are two very fine bowlers.
Yeah.
They're going to struggle to bowl the West Indies out. So I'd say I'm going with West Indies as well. So what's that? Is that another 2-2
It's a 2-2. Vish swings it yet again.
This is absolutely extraordinary. Okay, listeners.
Coalition podding this.
Yeah.
So that's the end
so
of our...
So rundown, hold on. We're running down our five-fold accumulator then.
Yeah.
And we've persuaded Vish. So what have we got?
Okay.
First game. New Zealand, Sri Lanka, we've gone with...
New Zealand.
Vish has cast the winning vote with New Zealand, on that one. England, Australia.
Australia, England, we ended up with England, which is ludicrous. Leave that off your paper. South Africa, obviously, are going to beat Zimbabwe. We went with Pakistan, didn't
we? Pakistan.
And with Ireland.
Ireland.
Okay. You'd get good money for that.
You would. And throw England in there for better money.
All right.
Well, there you go. That's a few tips for the punters out there. And we're going to be back in a moment because controversy reigns in the world of cricket about the size of people's bats. It's not the size of the bat, it's what you do with it. We'll be back in a moment. This is the section of the show which Lizzie has really come for, which is coming to have a row, it's called. This is the bat controversy. I think that I'm going to poison the well if I introduce this controversy. So, Lizzie, if you don't mind, why don't you begin by setting out what you think the position is in reality?
Well, the esteemed chief executive of the ICC, one David Richardson, says they are going to be having a look at bat sizes and whether they have artificially altered the balance between bat and ball.
Okay.
And it is unmitigated phooey.
So we've got unmitigated phooey over here on bat size. Phil, you look dead behind the eyes. Is this not a debate that attracts
passion? It doesn't really get me going, particularly. There's been some good, interesting stuff from the Grey Nichols bat makers, and I also spoke to a fella at Newbury as well. And they just find the whole thing very tiresome.
Just any man in Newbury?
No.
A man on the street?
An ex-Newbury bat maker who's now at Woodstock, and I spoke to him on Saturday. And they are tearing their hair out because they say it's not about the size, it's about how it's pressed, and it's about the weight distribution. You know, and I thought Brett Lee had a bit of common sense when he said, well, you know, if Chris Gayle wants to pick up a 3.5 pound bat and hit me out of the ground, then good luck to him. And I kind of like that. I like that kind of common sense, really. There's obviously issues about boundary sizes in international cricket. That goes without saying. You sometimes watch Indian cricket and you tear your hair out because the balance has gone between bat and ball. But overall, the game has always been a batsman's game. People buy bats. They don't buy balls, or even on a recreational level. If you can hit the ball with a beautiful stick in your hand, then all good for me.
All right. I think the problem with this debate is the confusion right at the beginning of it, which is what Richardson said. Richardson didn't say bats are too big. Richardson said modern bats are too good. And then a series of articles came out saying it's not about bat size.
Yeah.
And if I was Richardson, I'd say, you know, I might have been thinking that, but it's not actually what I said. Mm-hmm. What I said was modern bats are too good. So we've had this series of articles, and Atherton's been retweeting it, and Butcher's saying this is common sense. What do Mark Butcher and Mike Atherton know about batting, honestly? And they're both saying, this is the common sense.
I used to have a bat from Mark Butcher, which I kind of stole from him, but I told him I was stealing it.
Confession.
V100, red grip. We used it in the West Indies Tour 2004, and it had edges that I've never seen before, and it was a brute of a thing, and it was his pride and joy.
Well, there we are.
But the point is, of course bats have got better. Everything's got better.
Yeah.
You know, everything develops. They're not going to still be batting with the same bats they used in 1930. That's just...
Yeah.
It just is another chapter in the polemics of these pompous old pros who just think that everything's gone to hell in a handcart and that cricket isn't as good as it used to be. Mm. And you're all heathens because you happen to like an unnuanced match of cricket where someone just with a plank of wood hits the ball really far, which is what I happen to like.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to have a narrative. It can just be a big bloke with a big piece of wood whacking a ball really far.
Yeah.
And I find that quite fun. And maybe that makes me a heathen. But it's just so dull to hear pompous middle-aged men banging on about how the game's really rubbish these
days.
That's
why we brought you here, Liz. That was class.
God, I got to get that off my chest.
Vish, as our requisite middle-aged man.
It's quite funny that this debate is only... Well, people have only been talking about it in the last 2.5-3 years, just when we started using 2 new balls in...
And 4 outside the ring.
And 4 outside the ring.
Yeah.
And suddenly people are scoring more runs.
Yeah.
Weird.
I guess my only observation wasn't so much that I don't disagree with Richardson or do, but afterwards there was a stampede to go, but what do the bat makers say about the effect of bats? And I thought, that's a very odd way of going about things because, you know, when we wonder about what the impact is of drilling for oil in the Alaskan wilderness, we don't go ask BP. Let's get a proper, impartial, objective view from BP. Of course the bat makers are saying it's not the size of the bat you brought the boundaries in. And everyone goes, well, you heard the bat makers. We were the bat makers, of course, as if they haven't got a stake in this
but
argument.
But what triggered it was AB de Villiers' record-breaking innings.
Yeah.
Are we saying we never want to see records broken? I don't understand what the problem is.
I think AB...
It was fun... And it was great. And, of course, we want to see records broken. We watch the Olympics to watch the world record being broken.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
I think on a straightforward sort of ODI cricket balance between bat and ball level, I think four outside the ring rather than five is far more important than the width of your bat, or the depth of your bat, rather. I think that's crucially important. And that is a shocker for me. And I find that it's dispiriting at times to watch that kind of imbalance there towards the latter end. In terms of the bats, no, I'm just not interested.
Have any
in
of
it.
You heard of the wonder material graphene? Have you come across this? Been a little bit of press coverage.
Are you going all geeky on this?
It is a kind of carbon lattice that is only one cell thick. It's just a carbon cell lattice. It's supposed to be the strongest material known to man, and yet it's also great hyperconductivity. You can run electricity across it, but it's so thin. It's only a cell thick, but it's the strongest thing in the world until I found my great-grandfather's bat, which is actually the thinnest, strongest thing in the entire world. Have you ever held an old bat? know, they're extraordinary things. I think they should be forced to play with them. I'd love to see AB coming out there with his, with his piece of hardened balsa wood, no more than a pen. Hit it with that, AB.
He probably would, to be fair.
He probably would. Yeah. No, the problem isn't AB. The problem is the number 7, the number 8, the number 9, who are mishitting it for 4 or 6 because they're getting value where they wouldn't have got value before. Because just like a golf club, that sweet spot has expanded so that even what would used to be a shank is now a pretty good drive.
But I think even that argument's bollocks as well, because...
Oh, don't mince your words, Fish.
No, because cricket... The problem with cricket is that there's this morality that things should be done in a certain way, that we turn our nose up at someone... You know, it wasn't that long... Well, it was quite a long time ago, but, you know, people used to turn their nose up at leg side shots.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd still object.
And people now, they're all, you know, that's not conventional cover drive. He has hit it for 6 over extra cover, though.
Yes. Now, you're right.
That really infuriates me. And I think the people who as Lizzie said, the older players who don't like records being broken only don't like doing so because the game has moved on and they're essentially being shown up, being nowhere near as quick as the bowlers we have now, nowhere near as strong as the batsmen we have now. And it scares them because essentially there are people who are living off that stuff, telling the same story every damn day and getting paid a lot of money to do it.
I think I completely agree with all of you. The problem with this argument is I completely agree with all of you. What I object to is the press coverage. I'll give you a quote. In the Guardian article talking about bats, which was trying to demystify the situation, the Guardian article said, hey, you know, a player nowadays is not hitting it any further with a modern bat than Barry Richards did. And I think all those number 7s and number 8s are hitting it approximately as far as one of the most talented batsmen of any age. Mm. I mean, that's not... It was so... Basically, the argument is riddled with falsity and hype. But the truth, as you've all wonderfully identified, the truth, the kernel, the core of wisdom in all of this is the fact that it's absolutely nothing to do with the bats and cricket's in great shape.
And, yeah, absolutely. Let's dedicate this show to Albert Trott, who hit it out of Lords in about 1910. Dedicated to Trot.
Yeah, and he definitely did that.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the end of another show. We're going to have a midway through the tournament show, and then we're going to have another show just after the end of the tournament. And there may be other shows after that. Ross may reappear at some time.
That would
Phil,
be good.
There's another edition of All Out Cricket coming out.
There's always one.
And you met David Gower.
Well, I met David Gower, my all-time... human hero. Forget just cricket, just generally.
Yeah, better than a robot hero.
I had an interesting week with him. We had a stunningly beautiful hour on the phone together, where it was almost as enjoyable for me as it was for him. And then by that afternoon, the dictaphone had been wiped by a colleague of mine who will remain nameless.
A former colleague now.
No, not at all. He's up and coming, but he had a bad weekend. He retired to his demons. I retired to my bed. It was a bad day. Somehow, our David agreed to speak to me again the following week.
That's lovely.
So I met up with him in a wine cellar in Borough Market. And,
very civilised.
And we discussed wine, politics. I don't agree with him. And the wonder of cricket itself. It was a glorious time. I love David Gower, and he is the man for the next issue of All Out Cricket.
Fish, Lizzie, thanks for coming on the show. Tweet us.